Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. We are talking fiction today, and we are joined by one of our favorites, Heather Goodenkoff. Her new book is called The Overnight Guest. It's about true crime writer Wiley Lark. She's snowed in at an isolated farmhouse where she's retreated to write her new book. There's a cozy fire burning, complete silence. It would be perfect if not for the fact that decades earlier at this very house, two people were murdered in cold blood and a young girl disappeared. As the storm worsens, Wiley finds herself trapped inside the house, haunted by secrets. And there are many of them, let me tell you. So let me bring my guest on. Let me tell you a little bit more about Heather. She's the critically acclaimed author of several novels, including the New York Times bestseller, The Weight of Silence. And she lives in Iowa. She's joining us to talk about The Overnight Guest. Heather Goodenkoff, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yes, and I should say welcome back. This is your ninth book, The Overnight Guest. Is it still as thrilling to you to release your ninth book as it was your first?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there's nothing like it. You work so long on a project, spending day in and day out with these characters and the storyline. So when it finally hits the shelves, it's just as thrilling. The ninth time as it was the first time.
Right. And each time, of course, is going to be a slightly different experience, too. This time, I understood you were actually wrote through the pandemic. We actually talked during that time, and this book was still coming to fruition. But I read in the acknowledgements there, you wrote this in the pandemic, but you were never lonely because of all the characters and the number of people it takes to put a book together.
Yeah, that's so true. Yes. So, I was working from home like everybody else. And my husband and I were, he was working from home as well. And so there was always people around in that sense. But also, though my publisher is across the country, I could always call on them to talk things through. If I hit any snags with the book, I could talk to my editor or my agent, and so I didn't feel lonely at all.
Yeah. Well, I know this book was much anticipated, and it's getting rave reviews. Liv Constantine blurbs your book right on the front there. She's the author of The Last Mrs. Parrish. She says Heather Goodenkoff is a master of suspense. That is quite a compliment there.
It really is, and the writing community and other authors are just so supportive. A handful of authors got an early read of The Overnight Guest and were so generous with their time and their kind words. So whenever you get a quote from a fellow author, especially like Liv Constantine, it is a highlight.
Yeah, yeah. So let's tell listeners a little bit about the story. Your protagonist in The Overnight Guest is Wiley Lark. She's taken herself off on retreat to an isolated farmhouse so she can finish her new book. But it's not quite that simple. So tell us a little bit about the story. I know there are many twists and plots here, and we have to be careful not to give stuff away, but I'll let you do that.
Right, yes. So yes, nothing is that simple. So yes, Wiley Lark is a true crime writer. She travels to Iowa, middle of nowhere, rural area, to finish up her current project, which just happens to be the same old farmhouse where a terrible crime had taken place 20 years before. And as she's working, a 100-year blizzard rolls in, and she finds herself stranded. There's no way to get out. There's no way, seemingly, for people to get in. But when she opens up her front door, she finds a child laying in the snow. And, of course, she brings the child in, has no idea how this child got there. But very quickly realizes that somebody else will do anything to try and get into that house that night.
And the setting is perfect because it is this ice storm, this terrible blizzard, freezing cold weather where you want all the drapes drawn and the doors bolted. You want to be nested in there. But circumstances don't quite allow that to some extent for her. There are so many layers to the story. And of course, the weather is one of them. The location is another. It's a fictional town in Iowa, but it's somewhere that she's not unfamiliar with. And I want to just begin with the boy, though, because I read that this was inspired by a real life story of a woman who was found almost frozen. So tell us how you came across that story and then how that transpired into what you've done with Overnight Guest.
Yeah, so I, like many authors, go searching for book ideas through the news and, you know, other resources. And I was online one day just trying to find inspiration, look for something unique, a unique story. And I came across this news article from 1980 about a young woman who was traveling to see a friend of hers in Minnesota in the middle of winter. Temperature was well below zero. It was icy and snowy and slippery out. And as she traveled, she slid off the road into a ditch and had to decide whether or not she was going to stay with the car or walk the final 2 miles to her friend's home. Well, she decided to make the walk and almost made it. 6 hours later, she's found right outside the door of her friend's house. Her eyes are frozen shut. She's frozen solid, seemingly. And once they get her to the hospital, the doctors begin working on her. The hypodermic needles that they use on her break. She's so cold. But amazingly, she survives and is perfectly fine. But when I read that story, while it's not a crime story, it just was really stuck with me. And I thought, I need to use this in my book in some way. And so that was our introduction to the young boy in the story and how he comes into Wiley's life.
It's interesting because my last week's guest wrote a book called Girl in Ice. Totally different inspiration. Are you familiar with that one?
I do. I've not read it yet. It is on my to-be-read pile. I love Erica Ferenc and her book, so I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, and her story was inspired by two turtles that she saw frozen mid-swim in ice. So it's amazing where all these inspirations come from.
Yeah.
One of the questions at the back of the book, you have reader questions at the back of the book, and I always like to turn one or two of those around on the author. So this one was, the young boy says at some point in the book, it isn't the dark you should be afraid of, it's the monsters who step out into the light that you need to fear. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so that's actually a child in the book, and it's a third thread in the story.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That it takes a while for us to figure out how they're all connected. And the child is with the mother, and they are in a very isolated place as well, different from that of where Wiley's at, and lead a very kind of dark, dismal existence. But the child starts talking about fear and how many people are afraid of, you know, dark corners and shadows. But for this child, it's what steps out into the light, the things that you can see that are the scariest, which kind of turns that old, you know, saying of, you know, what goes bump in the night in the dark is what's scary. Mm-hmm. And for this child, it isn't those things. The dark is actually comforting.
It's, you know, when I read that, Heather, I was reminded, my dad said something very similar to me when I was a kid because I was terrified of the dark. And he said, it's not the dark you need to be afraid of. And he said something like, or I interpreted it as, it's the people hiding in the dark you need to be scared of, which made it even, like, you know, 100 times worse.
Yeah.
I don't think...
Not only is it dark,
there's people in there. Yeah, I'm sure that's not what he meant, but that was where my little reader's imagination took me.
Right.
So, we mentioned that the town is fictional, and I think you pretty much nearly always create a fictional town, right?
Right.
Tell us why you do that.
Well, I choose fictional towns because I am a fiction writer, and I need that leeway, you know, for oftentimes my setting is part of the story, and it, you know, almost becomes a character in itself, and I need to develop it just like I would the characters. Although I do refer to real-life locations in the state of Iowa, but the towns where the bulk of the action takes place is fictional.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, in the book, there is this huge tree in the middle of a gravel road, two gravel roads, where that really becomes a landmark in the story because we see it in the winter, in present day, and in 20 years earlier, in the middle of summer. But it's kind of grounds the reader on where they're at in the story. And that is a real tree in Iowa. It's a huge tree in the middle of these two gravel roads that people have to actually slow down and edge their way around. But I just thought that was so remarkable and what such a neat landmark that I had to include it in the story, although... It's fictionalized.
Right.
Book.
Right. Well, that is interesting that it's a real place and a real tree. It's almost like a natural island, a natural roundabout.
Exactly.
So let's talk about how you created Wiley Lark, the main character, because she's a little crusty in the beginning, I thought, mainly because she didn't like the dog, and you know I'm a big dog lover.
Same here.
Yes, I know you are too. But tell me a little bit about Wiley and, you know, how she came to you and how you started developing her character.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, Wiley is a true crime author who lives in the Pacific Northwest and is, you know, has a complicated life of her own. She has an ex-husband that she doesn't get along with well. She has a very complicated relationship with her teenage son, and she pretty much retreats and takes off to the middle of nowhere, Iowa, in order to finish her book, not only to finish it, but also to not deal with her situation back at home. And so she's a little crusty. She's complicated. This dog adopts her as she comes to this farmhouse, and she's not there for it right away. But as Wiley grows and changes throughout the book, we get to know her a little better and why she is the way she is. But I got the idea for having a true crime writer be a main character because I, like many, love, I should say more like fascinated I am with true crime. And I listen to all the podcasts, watch all the documentaries, read the books. But I'm a fiction writer, and so I thought, well, if I don't write nonfiction, I can at least have a true crime writer be the main character in my book. And so that's kind of where Wiley and her role came from.
Yes, and that's a great character, because to me, the character's job is, you know, a huge part of who they are, obviously, and I don't remember reading of a true crime writer before, as popular as that is these days. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like that. It's just always, it's in everyone's mind these days. We're just kind of inundated with that through podcasts, television shows.
Mm-hmm.
Books.
Yeah, I mean, this all started with 48 Hours or, you know, shows like that many years ago, and
yes.
I was thinking the other day, what, I can't remember which show it was, but it had a 20th anniversary or something, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've been watching this stuff for like 20 years.
Cool.
I had a friend who Yes, I know. And it's it makes you see things differently. And I think especially as a writer, there's some great, unfortunate, but great material there.
Right, right. Yeah. And, you know, we always do keep in mind that with true crime, there are the real victims. And we always do keep that in mind with when we hear those stories.
Yeah. I want to talk about how you approached the storytelling here, because you've got a couple of different timelines, you've got different points of view, and it's suspense, it's fast paced. So it's like, how do you put all of this together, keep everything on track? And I know that you've said before that you describe yourself as a messy writer. You just do a quick first draft, get everything in there, and then go back and start moving scenes and refining the story. But how did that process go for you on this, given the different timelines and the different points of view?
Yeah, so you're right. I do. I write ugly and messy, and I just get everything out on the page to begin with. But I did have a sense of where I wanted to go. I knew I had these three perspectives that I wanted to focus on: the present day, the crime 20 years earlier, and the story of this mother and child. And so I started writing in the summer, so I started with the summer scenes, which were the events that happened the 20 years earlier. And I also wanted to start with the true crime, because it really is the anchor of the whole book, of why everything happens in the story. So I started there, and I just started writing those scenes. As winter rolled around, I switched over. I stopped writing the summer scenes and flipped over to the winter scenes, because the weather was getting cold, and it was the perfect environment for writing Wiley's story. And, you know, it happened to be a very cold winter that year as well, so it worked perfectly. And I had peppered the manuscript with the third perspective of the mother and child, but it really didn't come together for me until the very end, when I was almost done with the book. It was due to be turned in. I had some conversations with my editor. You know, I was telling her it just wasn't quite as strong as I wanted it to be. And in our conversations, you know, kind of unearthed that really the focal point of that perspective is this window that this young girl looks out of, and the world that she sees through this window. And that really, really just opened up that storyline for me. So I went back and I wrote furiously those last 2 weeks, and really strengthened that perspective. But, you know, you're right, it can be really difficult to keep all those layers and keep them in the right places. So what I do typically in the middle of a book is that's where I draw my outline. And how I do that actually is with Post-it notes on the wall. And then I can kind of see where I've come from and where I'm going with the book. So I don't outline initially,
right?
But I do make a timeline as I get further into the project.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. So you've got the picture in your head, you've got the picture laid out, basically, and then you're piecing it together to make sure it makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. So writing from different points of view, how do you approach that? It's something that, you know, some authors do very well, and of course you're one of them. And it's something that can also really spoil a book if it's not done well. So tell us how you approach that.
Yeah, you know, that for me, I love writing from the different points of view. I just like the idea of this, you know, big event being examined from all sides, from different views. And so, you know, the first thing is to, you know, choose the right characters to tell the story. And sometimes that might take a little, you know, experimentation as I begin writing to land on, you know, who is the story going to be told through? So when I first started writing The Overnight Guest, the 20-year-old storyline was primarily told, well, only told through the point of view of the young girl whose family is impacted by the crime. Mm-hmm. And as I got moving along, I realized that I needed more perspective in that, and needed to include the police procedural and the ins and outs, and you know, the thoughts of the police officers and the law enforcement folks who are involved in that. So, you know, that's always an exploration, too, of what is the right voice to tell each part of the story.
Right.
And so that was a big part of it, landing on those correct, you know, the right voices. But also, you know, knowing when to give up the information. You know, you have to dole that out bit by bit. You know, you don't want to give out too much too soon, too much too late. So that's always kind of tricky as well.
Yeah. And I heard that you actually, along the way, as you started writing, and I'm not sure what process, what stage this was, and how much work or rework was involved, but you actually changed your viewpoint on who the bad guy should be.
Absolutely. That happens to me all the time. And it's not the most efficient way of writing, but I think I, like many writers, kind of discover my characters as I'm working. And, you know, I had one thought as I moved into the story, and that changed midway. And then as I kept writing, it changed again. And so that does, you know, it does mean that there's some cleaning up to do, you know, on the back end, and, you know, making sure everything makes sense and everybody's in their place and the motives make sense to the reader as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's, you know, for me, it takes me a while to land on who's going to be the most diabolical, who's going to be the one to carry out the crime.
Right, right. And let's just jump back to pace again a minute, because that is, again, something that some authors lose me on, because either the pace isn't sustainable, it's too fast, and it's like, you know, it's just one crisis after the other, or it's too slow and nothing ends up happening. You know, it's at too slow a pace, and you just lightly touched on that. But how do you determine if it's too fast or if it's too slow?
Yeah, you know, that's hard to put into words. You know, I think you just want to, as I reread and as I have early readers read through my work, that's one of my big questions for them and for myself is, you know, does each section leave the reader wanting to turn the page? Do I give enough description of the character's backstory to, you know, give the reader a sense of who this character is, but not too much that we get distracted too much? And so it's a fine balance. And I am fortunate to have some early readers who take the time to give me that feedback.
Yeah, now, when you say early readers, Heather, what point do you normally give, or we'll talk about the overnight guest, at what point mm-hmm. did you give out the manuscript to early readers? Because I know some authors who don't release that until they're pretty sure it's done. Others give it out fairly early.
Yeah, a few of my early readers happen to be my sisters. So they so I've got some built-in early readers. And so they get very early versions because I feel very comfortable giving them my mess. You know, they know me and they love me anyway. And so I will give them an early version of the book and some friends, and then I'll get some great feedback about what works and what I should look at again. And then once that's tidied up, I go to another layer of early readers, just a couple people who I trust and I know are going to give me honest feedback. And then it goes to my editor, mm-hmm. who does, you know, gives me the feedback to move forward as well.
Mm. Have you ever had, has your editor ever said, Heather, you need to change this, and you really strongly disagreed with it?
Nothing strongly. I've had, you know, suggestions that, you know, cause me to, you know, pause, like, oh, I really worked on this for this long, and I, you know, this is the path I thought thought I was going to take. But one thing I've learned, because writing is very collaborative, yeah. and that relationship with your editor is so important with trust building, is an editor has the view of being able to step back and look at the project as a whole. While I've been buried in it for mm-hmm. months and months, that sometimes I can't see where I need to go back and revisit things. And the editor, my editor, does an excellent job of stepping back and seeing that bird's eye view. So I trust her immensely. And so if she sees something problematic, 100% of the time she's right.
Yeah.
In the same sense, if I felt very strongly about something, about wanting to keep something or, you know, change something that we talked about, she would be very respectful and open to that as well.
Right. Yeah, it's true. When you're buried in a project for a long time, even when you're reading it back to yourself, you will read what you think is there sometimes.
Right.
And miss the fact that there's a whole piece of or there's a link here that's totally missing these two people or two situations. So I want to talk a little bit about marketing, Heather, because mm-hmm. you are so good at this. I see you very active out there with other authors. You're always so generous about promoting other authors' work. And you do a lot on Instagram. And you talked earlier about your two sisters. Your sisters are your early beta readers. And I know family is very important to you from following you on Instagram. So who, apart from your family, are your biggest sources of inspiration and mentors that you've had along the way?
Oh, my goodness. You know, the writing community is so supportive. And over the years, I've connected with so many great authors and writers who have cheered me on along the way. And I certainly want to do the same for them. So, yeah, there's just so many to count. But, I enjoy connecting with other writers, and you know, we've been doing some really fun things online to support each other. I do a fun bi-weekly interview series with two other thriller writers, Kara Ruta and Kimberly Bell, called The Killer Author Club, where we invite thriller writers on and we talk about all things killing of the fictional variety, of course. We share a cocktail. And this is all virtually, of course.
Right.
And we just have a ton of fun and try to get readers involved as well, try to make it as interactive as possible. I love getting into the heads of other writers. I also do a little series called Sidekicks and Side Trips, where I interview authors and their pets. And the focus is really on their animals, and we happen to talk about their books. So, you know, and so it just gives readers another view of some of their favorite authors.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the writing community is amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, talking of animals, it's our animals, I think, that often keep us sane when the rest of the world is going crazy around us.
I agree.
And I know you like to go on long walks with Lolo, and as I do with my book, well, I can't anymore because he's 17 now, but he can't walk that far, but we used to walk for hours and hours, and it's the best, you know, for clearing your head and creating ideas and just giving yourself space to think. So,
yeah, absolutely, I agree, Lolo. That is what Lolo and I do. We go for walks, and I think, and she explores.
There you go. So, I just wanted to touch on this because I know that you shared with us, and you've been very open about hearing challenges that you've had mm-hmm. since you were a child. And of course, last night, Coda, the movie about a deaf family, won so many awards. That must be kind of nice, I think.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think, and you know, I do have a profound hearing loss, but I can hear. I do okay. But it is so neat to see representation in art, and I could not be happier for that entire team and for such a fabulous movie. And it's incredible, and everybody should go watch it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but it's definitely on my list. I know that the supporting, the guy who won supporting actor has been acting and directing for over 20 years. So, you know, it must be so gratifying to see that. Well, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Always is. I know listeners can find out much more about you at your website, which is your name, Heather Goodenkopf. The book is called The Overnight Guest. They can find that on your website too. What would you like to leave listeners with today, Heather?
Oh, I think I would just say that I love connecting with readers, and they can reach out to me at, you know, my website, any social media accounts out there. And I love talking books and reading with folks.
Yeah. Well, I wish you great success with this. I know it's doing really well. So next one is in the works, I assume, already.
Yes.
And I know you don't like talking about it, so I won't ask you about it.
Yes. So, this was so much fun.
All right. Thank you so much, Heather. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you, Vicki.
And again, the book is called The Overnight Guest, my guest, Heather Goodenkopf, and you can find her at her website, heathergoodenkopf.com. If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.